Jim Page is a Seattle-based singer-songwriter and activist. In Ireland, he's probably best known for his song Hiroshima Nagasaki Russian Roulette, made famous by Christy Moore.
No one had ever seen such a terrible sight before. The world watched with eyes wide to see where it would lead. As the politics of power passed around the sea, was it time to remember that we never can forget they were playing Hiroshima Nagasaki Russian Roulette?
I spoke with him recently in Dublin.
We had a governor in Washington State who was a nuclear physicist, and she had been in charge of the nuclear industry, or the regulatory commissions under Nixon. And she was a real right-winger, and she was opening up the state to accept everybody's waste. We have a nuclear dumping site out in eastern Washington called Hanford. She just basically opened up the site in the state for everybody in the country. And also she was really pushing forward the nuclear plant. Hanford keeps leaking. It's polluted the Columbia River. It's endangered all the farmlands around. People get leukemia and stuff when they're downwind of Hanford. The evidence is all there. But I was just annoyed by this. And she was really big on asking for your credentials if you were going to challenge her, if anyone wanted to challenge her on this stuff, because she had like 3 or 4 PhDs. And so she would publicly humiliate you and tell you that you couldn't challenge her because you were not as educated as she was. So to me, it was like playing Russian roulette with these things. So that's why I wrote the song. I was really upset about that. And I wanted to put as many contradictions and anecdotes about the industry and the nuclear thing itself into one song as I could.
With the radiation halos that hung above their face, with the key to the sure cure and treatment of our ills, a hot shot of cobalt and a pocket full of pills, speaking always of the enemy.
Christy Moore picked it up in 70. They first heard it in 79, and he wanted the lyrics then, and by next year, I think he was doing it, and then the Moving Heart started doing it, and they became a band, and it actually became like a hit in the country in the early 80s. It was adopted by the anti-nuclear movement, and it was put to good use. The song was put to good use. When I got to Ireland, I was amazed by the reception that folk song would get, especially the kind of folk song that I do. I mean, my definition of a folk song is any song that comes from the community and returns to the community. It's not written for a board of directors or a record company, anything like that. It's written for the community that it comes from, and that's who it goes back to. That makes it a folk song. And by that definition, a lot of rap is folk music, jazz is folk music, punk is folk music, country western is folk music. If it serves that purpose, it's folk music. That's my definition. So anyway, I was impressed by the reception that folk music would get in Ireland when I first came here. And I wound up basically living here for like 3 years. Back in the States, there are pockets of really good reception, but it's kind of what I call the butterfly under the glass syndrome. It's such a beautiful insect, you capture it. It's not the thinking where it's a beautiful insect or a beautiful butterfly and so you go move where the butterfly lives so you can live together. No, you capture it, you put it under glass and you hang it on your wall. And that's what a lot of goes on in the States as far as music goes. And as far as everything goes, it's an economic thing. I don't think that kind of thinking is really very old, but it does happen. We have a very advanced commodity culture, so you'll go sing songs in America, and you'll get a completely different response. A lot of people don't think they can sing, for one thing, and so they don't think the music is part of them, and so the music gets treated as an other, and others are things that you buy in stores, not things that you make yourself. And the song can be really important, but it has a kind of a distant relationship to you. But in Ireland, it seemed to me it was much more immediate. The oral tradition was still alive. They understood carrying stories from one place to another. And history can be carried on that way. And, you know, those songs are still alive. Recently, since September 11th, of course, things have ratcheted up a few notches. And oddly enough, the attention to engaged folk music, music that's engaged in the life around you, the world around you, call it political, whatever you want. I don't like the word protest. I never use it. The world is a big thing. We should sing about all of it and not segment it off into little places. Anyway, the attention paid to this kind of song, the, you know, the political content of certain kinds of songs, the reality content, has shifted since September 11th. More people than have ordinarily paid any attention, you know, let alone liked or disliked it, are paying attention. And those that are paying attention are doing it with much more of a studied air about them. It's like the attention is more focused because it actually matters more. What I'm writing. What I'm writing has gotten a tad bit more globalized in its thinking. It sees the world bigger. There's a song I wrote not too long ago called The Great Stone Wall, which I like a lot. And I couldn't even tell you what it's about, except that the through line that runs through it is that it hasn't always been like this, and so it won't always be like this. It's kind of like we are in the middle of something changing. If I could face the day the way the sunlight does, if I could rise with the morning mist, then I would know the way that the water fish swims. I could hold the lessons in my fist. We are dying, say the elders, and we don't even know this is only a temporary peace. We're only waiting for the outcome to show and the endings to be released. Behind the silence of a great stone wall, the howling of a new wilderness. Beyond the distance of a great stone wall, it would change, it will change. It wasn't always like this. See, it's kind of like that. But it's got a larger feel than a lot of the stuff that I used to do. So to me, like a well-written song about an event works for an insider and an outsider. It has to, or it's not doing its job. It's got to work both ways. Woody Guthrie's songs worked both ways. If you were there, it worked. If you weren't, it told you something you didn't know before. And I did a lot of stuff like that for years and years and years and years. And I still do, don't get me wrong. But recently, it's like my vision has expanded, I guess, to more than just a regional song or a regional story. It's larger than that. Because I think we're at a crossroads. I think we're at a very serious kind of cliff edge here. We could either fall off to our deaths, or we could learn to, I don't know, parasail. We could learn to dive from the heights. What Seattle showed us on the movement side was that we could actually do something. We could actually succeed. What we had in mind to do, we could actually do. A lot of people's dreams came true on that day. People's nightmares came true too. The police state revealed itself. At least the possibility of a police state. We knew what kind of equipment they had in the basement. We knew that they knew how to use that kind of equipment. I remember walking down the street on Tuesday, and here's this guy in the doorway, right? And he's wearing a suit. And he's got a little wire running up to his ear, and there's a little earphone in his ear. And I walked right up to him and I said, "Receiving orders?" And he looked at me like I was the biggest asshole he'd seen in weeks, and I just smiled and walked off. Friends of mine in the Independent Media Center, when they were shut down Tuesday night, they were told to shut their doors. They were very nearly, you know, evicted from the president. From the premises. Anyway, they were told to shut down. And the cop who told them to shut down said, "We're just doing what the Secret Service told us to do." On the one hand, we had a major victory of actually shutting the meetings down. And on the other hand, they had a major training session as to how to militarily occupy a city. That was Seattle. Was a great and wonderful victory. We'll see what happens now. See if we can carry that sort of energy and positive thinking. Enlightenment. It's an enlightenment. That was and continues to be an enlightenment. People are thinking more all the time. Let's see if we can carry this on. Big money pulling on invisible strings, getting into everything so deep. It's hard to believe it's in the food and the water and the air you breathe. The chemistry, the biotech, the banker with the bottomless check, the corporations and the CEOs. The bottom line is the profit grows. The money talks, you don't talk back. They don't like it when you act like that. But didn't we shut it down, didn't we? November 30th, 99. Locked down at the police line, and they're hitting you with everything they got. But you ain't moving like it or not. And they're tying your wrists with plastic cuffs, and they're loading you up on a great big bus, and they're taking you down to the Navy base. Pepper spraying you right in the face. Try to break you down, try to get you to kneel. But you got the unity, and this is for real. And they can't break a spirit that's coming alive. That's the kind of spirit that's bound to survive. And didn't we shut it down, didn't we? Now it's the greatest story ever told. David and Goliath, how you be so bold, standing up to the giant when the going gets hot, and all you got is a slingshot. Well, they tell me that the world's turned upside down. Gotta pick it up and shake it, gotta turn it around. You gotta take it apart to rearrange it. I don't wanna save the world, I wanna change it. And don't let them tell you that it can't be done, cause they're gonna be the first ones to run. Just take a little lesson from Seattle Town, and WTO and how we shut it down. And didn't we shut it down? September 11th was a shock, but it wasn't a permanent shock. And the state response to it is what people are now dealing with. My audiences have actually increased. The response has gotten better. People want to hear what I have to say and what I have to sing more. Maybe I've been doing this for so long, people figure, well, what else is he going to do? I don't know. But I have gotten no negative response. It's too soon to judge how this thing is going to go, and that America is not monolithic. It is not one thing with one mind set. Okay, there were 10,000 people in Seattle just a couple of weekends ago against the war. There were 20 in Washington, D.C. There were 20 in San Francisco. The numbers are growing. The numbers are large to begin with. You know, it's not to the point now where we can overturn anything, but it's moving in that direction. People aren't as scared as they were. So we'll see how this goes. If the groundswell continues, you know, if popular intelligence continues, you know, and you see intelligent editorials, letters in every paper all over the country on a regular basis. We'll see how it goes. I'm quite positive myself. I saw a woman's face in the paper. She was from Iraq. I was looking at her. Looking right back, and her eyes still haunt me. Over all of the distance, such a human insistence, demanding answers and asking questions. How can you do this? And why don't you do something to stop it? These briefcase killers, these bureaucrat thugs, runners of bullets, pushers of drugs, these newspaper drones, this idiot system, this heart of stone. Don't look, don't see, don't hear, don't think. Sit back, relax, have a smoke, take a drink, go to work, come home, watch TV, watch the game. Let them breed dead babies in your ignorant name, and her eyes still haunt me. Over thousands of miles, millions of agonies, reaching, reminding, and asking questions. How can you do this? And why don't you do something distinct?